The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
And welcome to Guardian Radio AM. Today is Thursday.
Still Thursday, right?
Yeah. Thursday, February 9th. And it's a little after 11 o'clock in the morning. Once again, this is C.A. Nuri, and I shall be your host today as we have a discussion about the housing crisis. And I'm going to be challenging Aaron Green because we are in a debate on whether there is a housing crisis in the Bahamas or just that some people just doesn't deserve a house, right? And my theory is that there are shanty towns in the Bahamas because there are not enough rental units. And if there's not enough rental units inside the Bahamas, that means the Ministry of Housing is failing us because they're building houses for people to live in who can afford to get a mortgage, but not necessarily for people who can't afford to make the down payment and just want to rent something for like $200 a month. So that's what would be the conversation today. Why do shantytown exist in Santa Barbara? Why does it thrive? And why then when I go off E Street, they're all kind of shanty towns through those juk-juk corners and Bahamians living inside them. That in Centerville, they have Bahamians using the restroom and outside toilets. My mom used to call them a different word, you know, because she come from the island and thing. And it wasn't a pleasant word. But the idea that we still have Bahamians living a type of way is concerning for me. And I'm going to investigate that. Today is an open line Thursday. So you also can call in and talk about any type of topic you want to talk about. And Aaron and I will respond to that. But the trending thing is that shantytown. The other day I saw police officers going into the shantytown and asking persons who live inside these dilapidated houses for their citizenship and papers. Didn't say anything about the houses, the legal structures. They just ignore all of that and say, hey, let's talk about whether you are a resident or not. The other day I saw on social media pictures of irregular persons building their shanty towns, and I realized these shanty towns are state-of-the-art houses with solar panels. Right? With the hurricane windows, that's hurricane windows,
shadow impact. Proof. Yeah, impact windows and
windows,
shadow
right?
Yeah.
And I'm comparing these shantytown houses or supposed shantytown houses to regular houses through Peter Street, the Grove. And I say, man, something wrong. We need to have a conversation about it. And I said, I need someone who analytical. And I said, Aaron, you got to sit down with me and talk about this because I believe someone fooling us and not addressing the wound, but addressing the symptoms. We have a problem here, and the problem is we have a housing crisis, and not a soul in government is dealing with it. And I want to know your commentary on that.
Well, I've been a proponent of this particular discussion for a long time. I think that we have a housing crisis. And because we are not dealing with the housing crisis, we are not just dealing with the symptoms, but we think that the symptoms are the problem themselves.
You need to explain all of that because we have a listening audience who is discerning, and they don't like fluff talk. They don't like listening to the politician just talk foolishness in the head for the hair themselves. I need what you say, housing problem. I need you to analyze it so we all can understand, so we all can call it.
Well,
let's take
the point that you made, right? Mm-hmm. Is that the images that we're seeing of purported irregular migrants mm-hmm. constructing homes. Irregular homes, right? Mm-hmm. They're not approved. They may not own the land. They may have permission to be on the land, but they don't have the proper approvals to build, right? And some of these houses are actually of a significantly higher quality than homes in inner city communities where there's been no call for condemning the homes, mm-hmm. improving the homes, bringing the homes up to code or up to a particular standard, right?
And I want to pause you there because I want you to comment on this, right? Because there is a cry, there is a call that we need to bulldoze all of the houses that doesn't come up to par, right? Say bulldoze them all down because they're not up to par, and that they are contaminating our water system. They are destroying the environment. But I'm trying to say, some of these people are Bahamians.
Right.
You can't be putting Bahamians out and say, hey, I can bulldoze this house and you got to go find someplace else to live.
So, well, this is the issue. A lot of people are saying, well, what is taking so long? Well, what is taking so long is that you have to determine in these shanty towns, communities made up of unregulated homes and construction projects, right? You have to determine how many of those people are Bahamian. That's the first thing. How many are citizens and how many are legal residents, right? Whether they are contract workers, permanent residents, whatever, that are here legally, and how many people are undocumented migrants. You first have to determine. Shanty towns, there wouldn't be an undocumented migrant problem in shanty towns. And I will argue that shanty towns exist primarily as a source of housing for Bahamians, and that undocumented migrants take advantage of the existence of shanty towns for safe haven.
So you're saying the shanty towns, what you're trying to purport, that the shanty town system or way of life is started from Bahamians living irregularly because of poverty, then migrants now have taken advantage and have expanded? Is that what you're trying to suggest?
I imagine it started with documented migrants who have been forced or left to find their own housing, right? Mm-hmm. Because a number of these shanty towns are actually existing on properties owned by Bahamians, and those Bahamians are aware of the construction that's taking place on their property. So they're there with permission, right? And the housing is substandard. Bahamians who need housing then see that. Like I say, it's not undocumented migrants, it's documented migrants, mm-hmm. and they opt to go there. And as more Bahamians opt to go there, right, as it becomes more dense and crowded, then undocumented migrants are able to hide and find safe haven in those spaces.
So I know, and I see we have a caller, so we're going to engage him shortly. Mm-hmm. I know in Blue Hills, once upon a time, and I know there was some controversy with a leading housing developers saying that these people built illegally on this land, that these Bahamians went and squat and built nice houses in these housing division. And of course, the government had to intervene, and as the housing company reclaimed their land, mm-hmm. Even in terms of the church, that's someone selling property illegally, right? I see there are a number of Bahamians who are also squatting, mm-hmm. right? Because they cannot afford property. We've seen in people now in Grand Bahama and in New Providence who are living in cars, mm-hmm. right? And I hear and I see the response by the government. They say, oh, we can be building houses, you know, we can rent to own. Right, and I am saying that is treating the symptom again, mm-hmm. and not necessarily addressing the problem. The problem is the houses are too expensive, mm-hmm. or the rent is too much. Because these people renting a one bedroom house for $1,200, that's supposed to be a crime.
In what area,
Michael? That's too much.
And there's no... we're not demeaning Carmichael, nor are we demeaning the residents.
But $1,200
for one bedroom is untenable and unsustainable. Who is supposed to be able to afford that?
It's supposed to be criminal. It's supposed to be criminal because it's not sustainable for Bahamians.
And so I think that when we get to the root of it, we see a number of issues, right?
Mm-hmm.
We don't have a land use policy. We don't have a real one. They can say whatever they want.
Mm-hmm.
The government may have an economic land use policy that focuses solely on land that's viable for large economic development, like a hotel,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think the government has that, but we don't have an actual national land policy. I don't know when is the last time we've done a land survey. I don't know when it's the last time they've reconciled the land registries for various islands, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So we don't know what our land inventory actually is. We haven't done that work with the environmentalists to tell us, well, what's the viability of the land? What can we do here? What can't we do here, right? We don't have a housing inventory either.
Not housing, and that's neither day. Because I'm going to ask you what crisis means, and if and when you define what crisis, because I want to have it juxtaposed to housing crisis.
Mm-hmm.
And when you use the word crisis, what should be the response? Right after we'll go to the
like when you use the word crisis, there should be immediate action,
mm-hmm,
right? Like we know that the political machinery understands the concept of a war room, right? But as soon as you hear the term crisis, then you should create a war room and you should assign people to tackle certain issues. You start with just bringing in the information and then breaking it down, right? That's what should happen. But there's no urgency, there's no action, there are no task forces that are at least that are doing work that we can see.
Mm-hmm. So, right? And I ask you that as a baited question. Mm-hmm. That means there is no housing crisis. Because we started the conversation that there is a housing crisis. So I allowed you to define what crisis is and what is a necessary response. And now we've seen that there's a lack of response. But, so there cannot be a housing crisis.
The lack of response does not indicate that there is no crisis. The lack of response indicates that either the government is unaware that there's a crisis or they refuse to acknowledge. They refuse to acknowledge there's a crisis, or on their terms, there is no crisis. But just because the government doesn't think there's a crisis, it doesn't mean that there is no crisis.
Hmm.
I mean, the state of the people will tell you that there's a crisis.
State of the people will tell you there is a crisis. Let's go to the phone call and see what they're saying, because I'm going to bait you again on this crisis thing.
Hold on. Boy, quickly, caller, here's the point I want to make. We had a woman who was living in a bus.
Mm-hmm.
So the government's going to say, okay, that in and of itself is not a crisis,
mm-hmm,
right? They demanded that she move the bus, right? She said, I ain't got nowhere to go. They say, well, that in and of itself is not a crisis. I say that you engaged a process to move people off of land, but had no alternatives, no suggestions, no actual options for those people. That's a crisis.
That's a crisis. We can talk about that. And the same lady with the bus, because there was like six buses there with different families. Families were four and five and six living inside these buses.
So they deconstructed a housing complex, just run people out the bush. Okay.
Caller, let's go ahead. Producer Patrick, call it through. Caller, can you hear me? Go ahead, caller.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, Mike, I can hear you loud and clear.
Hey, good morning, Aaron Gray. Good morning, Nuri.
Good morning, morning.
And good morning to your producer. Listen, here's the crisis. And here is the human rights on my side. I cannot go, me and you cannot go and build a house without time planning permission. If I go do that, I would be charged and my house would be bulldozed. They would bulldoze my house, correct?
Okay, go ahead.
Can we do that?
No. But we have Bahamians and, of course, undocumented people doing it.
Yeah, I know.
They just can't come and bulldoze the house. See, that's the thing. They can't just come and bulldoze the house, even with the absence of those permits. There are procedures that have to be followed.
No. Here's what I'm saying. With no permission, right? I cannot go out there and build a house, do that.
I agree with you.
You understand what I'm saying?
Yes.
So this would be just a crisis. Beam is in crisis. And what's going to happen is, I hear an Aaron from, as a Bush journalist, I hear Beam is going to say, I don't care, I'm going to go and build my house without permission. Because the undocumented migrants are getting away with it. And it's going to be a crisis if the government don't solve the problem. Regulate who need to be regulated and who don't have no sensible contribution to the country, then send them back home. It has to be a tough decision, Mr. Nuri.
I agree with you. But thank you very much for calling. And let me see if I can bait Aaron to respond to that. Once upon a time, I'm going to the next caller shortly. Once upon a time, you mentioned, Aaron, that perhaps government may need to invest in housing for migrants to move off of these properties that they have built. I want you to expand on that and explain that theory. I mean, I don't want to quote you wrong. Did you say that, first of all? And which were you intended?
Okay, so here's what I was saying. What I was saying is that we have ethical and moral obligations, right?
To immigrants?
To anybody in the country, no matter their status. They're varying degrees of obligations, but we have obligations to people who are in country. When Dorian destroyed the homes, we didn't just put people on boats from Abaco and send them to Haiti.
No, we didn't.
Right? We created temporary emergency housing. Mm-hmm. We put people in for a particular period of time. In that period of time, the state should have been reconciling records, determining whether people are here legally or not legally. They should have been making a way to process people to send them back, to repatriate them to Haiti if they were here illegally, right? After determining what the status is on the ground in Haiti, talking to the Haitian government about how they'll be supported when they enter the country. We have these obligations, both moral and ethical, and in some states, in some senses, legal. That means that when you move someone from somewhere else, you have to house them, even if temporarily.
That's what the Prime Minister is saying, actually. He said, we will not move people, and this is what I'm paraphrasing,
right,
from the shanty town until we have an alternative.
Now,
so I remember the interview, and I paraphrasing him, so I hope I'm not misquoting him, but this seems to be the government policy, clearly, because there is no movement to
now,
move them.
Here's the thing. The government has the same, similar, if not exactly the same, obligations for citizens. You can't just, you know, someone is unhoused, you know that they've made a temporary housing arrangement, a solution, you move them from there. You can't move people who are homeless living in the bush and say, well, you homeless, you just can't live here in the bush. You got to have a plan for how you're going to transition these people to regular housing.
And that's what I want you to discuss. And as we talk to the callers, I want you to tell me, what could the plan look like? Let me read this in text and producer patch the caller through. Say, CA, really? These people don't want to pay rent. They want to live bill-free. Freeloaders. They actually moving in people abandoned homes without permission. And I've heard that is happening in Abaco. But do these people really want to be live free? Or are they paying someone rent? They paying Bahamian rent on these shanty towns?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So let me go to the caller. Go ahead, caller.
Have a pleasant good morning, Mr. Dury. How you doing,
sir? I'm doing well, man. Go ahead.
And have a pleasant good morning to your producer and Miss Green.
Morning.
Now, first of all, Miss Green, can you please give me a moment?
Go ahead. Just talk, Sparky. Just talk. There's no need for a preamble. Go ahead.
What disturbed me this week was I saw apparently a Haitian lady on WhatsApp or going around social media. Apparently, she's somewhere in the United States or Canada, lambasting the Bahamian people and talking to the United Nations of how evil we are and how bad we treated our people from Haiti. But I don't understand. She's already out of her own hometown, staying in somebody else's hometown. Don't want to go back to her own country. And we're trying to stop the same thing what she did from happening there. We're talking about illegal stuff. I don't want any Haitian, Jamaican, or anybody get angry with me. We are using the word illegal there. Now, when I get a document from the Ministry of Agriculture the other day, Mr. Dury, I got a document from Acre Land to do farming, right? Hello?
I'm listening.
Oh, I don't know. I'm disconnected. I got a document telling me I could do farming. I am not allowed to build no permanent structure on the land. I got a 25-year lease to do farming, but I can build a hut to store my tools and fertilizer and stuff. Should I build a permanent structure on the land, what's supposed to happen to me? I revoke the lease. They take back the land. They give it to somebody else. Am I right or wrong? Because I bet against the lease. Now let's use that in the other terminology. If I'm not allowed to do that, with a document in my hand allow me to go on the land and mount you, how could a foreigner walk into my land in the middle of the night on an unlicensed shanty boat, park on South Beach, move into the bush, and build a city, and yet my own country can tell me we can't break down their city and run them back where they're supposed to be because it's unethical and it's against the law?
Okay, Sparky, let me let Aaron and I respond to that right now, right? Before we go to the next callers, right? Aaron, the other day we produced some document that says that over 20,000 people who have documents to stay in the Bahamas, living in the Cowpen Road, Carmichael area, in unregulated communities, meaning they're living in shanty towns.
Mm-hmm.
These are people who have status. So we ain't talking about illegal immigrants no more, mm-hmm. right? We're talking about people who the government gives status to live here, to work here, thrive here,
mm-hmm.
are living in shanty towns amongst Bahamians or wherever it is.
Mm-hmm.
I want to know, how is that possible? And what can we do to make sure these people have some place to live? Because surely we have a duty to care, because our government gave them status to be here.
Right. So I remember very recently Minister Keith Bell making a statement that suggested they have to modify the law to address an employer's responsibilities for their employee vis-a-vis housing, right? I think what he was saying was that currently in the law, there is no legal oversight required by like the employer. I don't believe that to be the law. That it may have been amended over the last couple of years, but as far as I know and I'm concerned, the employer, the person who applies for the work permit, the person who is providing the job for the, who says that they need the migrant to fulfill this job, that they have some degree of responsibility in terms of ensuring that that migrant is in the proper housing. And I can't imagine it wouldn't be that way, because if we look at the new business license policies, right, they're requiring the lease, the tenant to provide the information to the landlord, right, for mm-hmm. this procedure. So I don't understand why an employer wouldn't have a responsibility to ensure that their employee on a work permit is living in approved housing.
I know Sparky said he's a farmer, or he has farmland. I know Sparky is matured that he may not be able to work his land by himself. So more than likely, he's going to hire immigrants, right? Where these immigrants plan to live, or will he ask, right, where you all live? If you all can't produce some place that you live in a legitimate place, I can't hire you. So I think farmers are responsible for these. Perhaps these shanty towns.
Well, the question is, how do you find a documented migrant to work for you if you are not the person who is responsible for their work permit?
Mm.
Can people secure their own work permit detailing the type of work that they do mm-hmm. and just be in the Bahamas? That's the question.
Surely that's happening. And Mr. Keith Bell mentioned that, especially in Harbour Island, that these people have moved from different islands and now taken up residence
and,
with their work permit for other islands right. and working in these other
islands.
So
they are in the country legally. They have a work permit for a specific job.
Specific
and what Bell said was that they're working outside of the scope
yes.
of their work permit, right?
Yes. And we're hiring them.
And so the question is, can a migrant secure their own work permit?
They're paying for their own work permit.
No, that's not the same thing. Mm. Paying for it is not the same thing as securing it yourself. I'm an independent contractor.
They ain't supposed to be paying for it in the first place. There you go.
Right, so we see the layers. We see the layers of breakdown there. Here's the next thing. If you are a small business person or an individual who has secured a piece of crown land, you want to engage in a farming initiative, and you are hiring a documented migrant, you see the work permit papers are legit, then you ask yourself, am I paying this person enough money for them to be able to secure approved housing?
$250 can't pay for no rent. When you're getting $250 a week, you know you can't be living no place. But let's go to the callers there. This text is saying that you're using the term too loosely when you say Bahamians are living in shantytown. So they're more likely, quote-unquote, paper Bahamians who live inside these shantytowns and okay. not necessarily Bahamians.
Two things. A Menace administration conducted a land audit in this last administration, and I think they found that 97% of the people in the shanty towns are Bahamians.
They're Bahamian people who get paper money. Paper Bahamians.
There is no difference.
There's no difference between Bahamians and paper Bahamians, Aaron?
Except that for someone that we... Let's not even use the term paper Bahamian, but for the purpose of this conversation. Someone who is a paper, that the state, if they gave you this, like they could, you could do something so egregious, that's very, very bad. That's like serious crime. That ain't murder. That's wasting murder. If you do something egregious, that the state can revoke said citizenship, right? Mm-hmm. But this idea that they are only paper Bahamians...
I'm trying to find out who's these Bahamians who live in the shanty town, and you're trying to confuse me. But go ahead, caller. Can you, Patrick, call it your producer? Caller, can you hear me?
I can.
Go ahead.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you loud and clear.
Wonderful. About it is dark in the voice. You know, we need justice, law, and order in this country. I knew you said something earlier in which I disapprove of. Let me show you something. If you are Bahamian or not, you must abide by the law. Okay? So you're not supposed to give people any free pass because we not, as Bahamian, we not getting or going to get any free pass. And you can't, you shouldn't come in the country think we supposed to take the responsibility for you, especially if you come illegal. The people in which government are put in houses there, they're like lawyers and teachers and stuff like that, who they recruit to come to the Bahamas to work. If you came to the Bahamas illegal, okay, and you get a permit illegal, you know, we're not responsible for you. Not my money, not my tax money. So you all stop prettying up this stuff and realize what the law is.
I hear you, Brimman. Thank you very much. We can comment on that. Let's go to the next caller, too. Pass the caller through. Go ahead, caller. Caller, can you hear me? No, the caller can't hear me? Oh, go ahead, caller.
Hey, good day. Good day, C.A. Nuri, and good day. I call her my sister, Erin.
Blessings.
But, yeah, you know something? I listen to everyone in the country, right? I try to be fair, and people, let's put the politics aside a little bit, because I can't mention the past government. Now, let's be realistic. When Mr. Menace was the prime minister, when they had that hurricane in Abaco, the AG then was about to send these people back. And that on record, and I keep telling people, you know, they was getting ready to send them back, but here comes Superman. Mr. Fred Smith decides to go to the court and get an injunction. And causing, well, they couldn't demolish, broke down no houses anymore. They couldn't do nothing. So, listen, Ms. Green, sometimes when we talk about the illegal immigrants, some people in our country, yeah, you might say people facilitating them to come here, but the bigger people in this country, like that same gentleman I just called, are responsible for a lot of these people who are still here. They had the chance. All right, when the hurricane came and wiped out the mud, they had that chance. But no. No. Why? Why didn't they do? Why didn't homeboy just decide to sit down and let the government do what they have to do? But my question to do y'all today. I spoke to a Haitian Bahamian. And do y'all realize that the government in Haiti know when these people launching their boat or they setting sail? The fellow went to a point to tell me, say, DeWitt, you know something? These people give these people food and water. So the problem only starts with the government, and I'm not talking about because I support this government, I'm talking about any government. The problem starts in Haiti. And I keep telling people this. We don't have enough boats to patrol the Bahamian waters. Right? These people, them allowing their people to come, Aaron.
Well, let me let Aaron respond to that because, you know, I'm challenging her today. The word says it's a Haitian problem and it's some kind of big conspiracy with the Haitian government. But I have another texter saying, man, the farmers are quite aware that their workers are building houses on their farmland mm-hmm. in order to produce food. And when you have that juxtaposed that we try to have food security and the government knows that we have immigrant workers, the government is aware that irregular housing is being built on the farmland. So everyone seems to be complicit or involved in this shantytown business.
This is such a heavy conversation. Because watch this. The point that Sparky made, that look, it's against the regulations to build permanent structures and to build living quarters on farmland or on crown land, right? Crown land is supposed to be used for farming. I hope that we don't think that the Haitian migrant is the first person to ever do that.
Mm.
I hope we don't think that this problem arose with the Haitian migrant population. I'm more inclined to believe that this is they see us do it, and so they do it as well. But we have to make a difference here. The shanty towns that we're talking about is two separate types, right? We're mm-hmm. talking about irregular construction mm-hmm. on land that is owned by a private entity, and the people either have permission to do it, or in some instances, from the landowner, or in some instances, they have been tricked into paying rent to someone who's purporting to be the landowner, but is not the landowner, right? That's private land.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have people who are building irregularly on crown land, right? On unassigned land is not assigned for living. Mm-hmm. There's two separate problems, right? The problem with people living on the crown, unregulated crown land is, first of all, there's no oversight, no regulation. There's contamination of the water supply. There's an impact on the environment and bird and animal species in that area, right? There's a security risk. You have no idea who is where and what's going on there. Outside of the migrant issue itself, we have a problem with runaway young adults,
mm-hmm.
runaway children, minors. Right? And a problem with drugs. So these unregulated communities, even those that are on not on privately owned land, they can be harboring all manner of criminal activity, right? It could be. That's a problem. For people who are building or living in irregular structures on land that is owned by someone, it's all kinds of issues that have to be resolved. We have to come to the bottom of before you could just kick those people off of that land.
I hear you. And I have a texter here saying that we mentioned that $1,200 for a one-bedroom house in Carmichael is too high. And the texter is saying that we need to appreciate how much they're paying for their mortgage and they got a loan, right? They can't afford to go no lower in order to make payment for their loan.
Hold on, pause.
Let me ask this question.
Wait, did they get a mortgage for a home that they're living in, or they got a mortgage for income-generating property?
I guess they get a duplex.
So maybe you can't afford to be a landlord.
But they are a landlord.
No, they can't afford to be one.
On the other side of the break, I want to know how much duty of care does the government have in terms of making sure they're rental units that people can afford to pay. Right? Because we know we have government apartments, but we haven't heard about government building any more government apartments in decades.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So, and I hear they're building houses, but the housing thing they're doing is not solving the housing crisis. Right?
Mm-hmm.
But they're trying to say, when should we lobby for them to build apartments? or tell them point blank what they doing and ain't working. But we'll talk about that on the next side of the break. This is Guardian Radio AM with C.A. Nuri. And of course, I'm speaking with Aaron Green, and we analyzing this housing situation and calling it whether it's a crisis or not, and whether our government is responding to it adequately. We'll be right back.
Going on in the world today? Only accepting cash at your business can be risky. Let Fidelity offer you and your customers safety, convenience, and the flexibility of a fixed or mobile terminal. Take it with you, on the move and on the go, because business should never stop. For more details, speak to one of our business development officers at 356-7764 in Nassau or 352-6676 in Freeport. Visit our website at fidelitygroup.com or visit us at any of our branches.
Loss of family members is very isolating, and people who have experienced loss appreciate when others have shared their grief. If you can't be there in person, go to the Nassau Guardian's website online at thenassauguardian.com and visit our obituary link. The Nassau Guardian's interactive obituary link allows you to read the funeral announcement, express condolences, or place photos on the online guestbook for one full year. Losing a loved one is painful, but that pain isn't the worst thing to happen. Friends, loved ones, colleagues, and neighbors who ignore the loss compound the pain. Should the bereaved family wish to place the obituary and photos on our obituary site, just contact the Guardian's funeral industry partners or the Nassau Guardian. Remember, there isn't one magic right thing to say to someone experiencing loss that will make the loss less painful or easier to bear. The Nassau Guardian's obituary link, available online at thenassauguardian.com.
J.S. Johnson Insurance agents are the best. Reliable service, we've been on the scene, protecting since 1919. J.S. Johnson Insurance has the best. Always, you're always covering me. J.S. Johnson Insurance, peace of mind.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.
Long and winding road that leads to your door will never disappear.
And welcome back to Guardian Radio AM, and we're having a discussion about a possible housing crisis and whether our government knows that we are having a housing crisis.
Possible?
Because if it was a housing crisis, I know my government would have said it, and they would have created a task force to deal with it. And since they haven't said it, and since there's no task force, I'm saying to you, there's no housing crisis. The same way there's no immigration crisis. You know, it's people who just crying wolves. You're like roosters. That's like one crow early in the morning. But I have this text here, and I'm going to the call line right now. It says, CA, the government needs to build affordable rental homes for Bahamians, not illegal foreigners, criminals that came here for criminals, the criminals that came here that are criminals. And Aaron, I'm just going to text
him. Yeah, go to call and we call back to that.
I grew up in the inner city, and I've seen these pink houses that the government has afforded Bahamians to get access. And I realize that poor people tend to treat houses.
Stop. Anyway, let's go to the caller.
Let's go to the caller. Go ahead, caller. Caller, can you hear me? Caller going once. Can you hear me, caller? No? Let's go to the next caller.
Hello.
Go ahead. I can hear you.
Listen, Yuri.
Yes, sir.
Listen, you they could make a client say, Ben, they could make that housing. They break the building down. That could have been housing. And, the next place I'm thinking about, Patelco on John Kennedy Drive, they can make that a hospital.
At least you're thinking of ideas and concepts, and I appreciate that. I mean, the Clarence being building was condemned. and had a mold and fallen debris. But I hear you, because there are a number of camp buildings on E Street, 3, 4, 5-story buildings on E Street North that are empty and void of people that can be refurbished and used as rental units and housing.
North? How north?
North Grand, Brink of the Hill, come down.
You mean from Mortimer's?
Mortimer's going down. All those camp properties that lay empty at this present time, government could have negotiated with the camp family and say, hey, we need to make these some rental dwellings because we have people living in cars.
That Clarence A. Bain building, spot caller, that's a great point, because you're right next to the university. You have a large number of young people transitioning from the family.
Storms.
No domes. from the family islands and young people transitioning out of their homes, that would be a wonderful place to have a housing complex for young people specifically. But let's talk about those pink homes, right? Right. I tell you, shut up. I'm going to tell you, shut up.
Sure, woman's
that's name. That's mean.
Yes.
But be quiet. Don't say that. Don't say this poor people just break up everything.
You just need to go on.
Every government-assisted living program, government housing program, every resident should be supported by a program that is attached to the house. If the people are in this condition because of a lack of anything, social skills, critical thinking, education, money, then when you move them into the government complex, they bring in the same things with them. They have to have a support system. This RISE program that the government has been tinkering with over administrations would be a great policy to attach to it. You to live in this building, you have to consent to certain things. First of all, you have to consent to be a part of a temporary employment program. The housing unit itself must have an income generating mechanism attached to it, whether it's a wash house or a press house to press clothes. Mm-hmm. To be in this complex, you have an assigned number of hours that you have to fulfill, whether it's in the wash house or press house, whether it's conducting maintenance or janitorial services on the compound, whether it's working the community garden, right? And then you need to have psychosocial support. There need to be strict rules, but there also need to be areas allocated for adults so that the people could do what people is do where they live with a degree of privacy. Mm. No drugs, no alcohol in common areas. And when I say common, not designated to adults only. There have to be rules, but there also have to be opportunities for people to grow, and there have to be targets to be met, and there has to be a plan. See, if you want to be someone who want to not just own the sun, but own all the land in the country, then you got to work with the people who actually own the land through the Commonwealth of the Bahamas. There should be a transitional program so people, when they meet their targets to come out of the government-assisted housing, that there's an actual low-cost housing option available for them.
So you're saying that there's no low-cost option at this present time?
No, man.
So, again, that's why I'm kind of concerned about the Ministry of Housing. Or that's a social services issue, low-cost housing and affordability. Perhaps I'm blaming the wrong ministry.
Housing should be responsible for things like the land inventory, the housing inventory. They should work with social services to identify these stats. How many people this month say that they've been kicked out of their home? How many people this month said that they were not able to meet their rent and they were evicted? Or this is month 3, they weren't able to do it over the last 6 months and they're now being evicted, right? The housing should work with them to always know what housing stocks we need. They should be working like tourism. How come tourism know how many more heads and beds we need? How come tourism always know how many more hotel beds we need? How much overflight we need?
Let's go to this caller right here. Let's see if I get it. Go ahead, caller. Can you hear me? Caller, I can hear you. Go ahead.
Yes. Hey, Nui and Howell, Miss Green.
Morning.
First, let me just say, the opinion of 1,000 men is of no value if none of them knows anything about the subject. Accordingly to studies, we've shown that we are 50,000 to 80,000 housing units short in the Bahamas, and every single year we have a net gain of about 3,000. If you take into account those leaving school eventually would be seeking housing on their own as adults. And so the problem is that we have a affordable housing crisis in the Bahamas, regardless of the immigrants or not. And we have not seemed to want to address the issues, use being in Grantstown and parts of Sandoval. Go back to a study in the 80s when those areas were declared uninhabitable due to the lead poisoning, oil contamination, and all those other different things. We somehow seem to want to walk away from that, right in the Guardian archives. And so the problem is, until we could actually have a conversation and an inventory of what the problem is, saying what we need to do, might do, hope to, and wish to do, is just a futile exercise and talk where there's no thought. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks very much, C. Allen. And that's just something that basically Aaron was saying earlier, that they first, we need to address and or acknowledge that there is a housing crisis. Our government has yet to acknowledge that there is a housing crisis. And of course, if there isn't one, the response is must be different. I'm saying that we need assistance in terms of rental units for persons who are making $250, the minimum wage. Those persons more likely will not be buying any house anytime soon, but they need to live someplace. They need to be able to access some sort of housing. And I want to know who is responsible for that. Who is responsible for an adult who's making $250 a week but wants to live somewhere and there's nothing in the Bahamas that they can afford? Is the government responsible for making sure that there's housing for those people?
Yes, they have to be. We make sure there's housing for everybody else.
That means there's a crisis.
The foreign direct investor, the tourist, right? The foreign employee, the people who come to work for companies that are based in the Bahamas. We make sure all of that happens. Why would we even assume that the government doesn't have a responsibility to ensure that there's sufficient housing stock in the country for first prioritize the Bahamians who don't just live here? This is the only place they're supposed to be, right? Like, they are Bahamians. Why wouldn't you prioritize that?
Then I would bait you to say that. If there's enough rental dwellings for someone who makes $250, that's a minimum wage the government set, $250 a week. If there is enough housing dwelling, surely the persons who are documented, these migrants who have come here to work and contribute to the Bahamas in whatever way they form, right? Surely those persons too will start renting from these places that the government has created.
Right.
Instead of living in shanty towns.
Absolutely. And that's the point. That's the point. The point is, you don't want people living in shanty towns.
Mm-hmm.
They should be able to access what's available. The question isn't should documented migrants be able to access this level of housing. The question is, why is there not sufficient housing available for people that they can afford? That's the question, not whether migrants should be accessing the housing. Why is there not sufficient? See, with all this talk about Airbnb, right? The government gung-ho.
Mm-hmm.
We encourage it.
Mm-hmm.
We encourage this as an alternative to mainstream tourism. And then the government start taxing it, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But at no point have I seen a conversation about what percentage of Airbnbs can we tolerate in the country, understanding we already don't have sufficient housing stock for Bahamians, and then add the documented migrants that we are inviting here to drive our development and construction and labor, right? And then you look at where our undocumented people live in.
Okay, we're going to this last caller right now. This construction boom in Abaco. Government is building all kind of houses in Abaco. Any talk or you heard anything about them building apartments that people can afford, or they just building houses? What do you hear?
I just hear they're building houses.
You see why there's a housing crisis in Abaco? Nobody is addressing the issue. If there's a shortage of houses, to tell even construction workers who are going there from Nassau can't find houses, what you building houses for? You're supposed to build apartments so people could live. So you build 5, 10 one time instead of one or two individuals. Let's go to this caller quickly.
Yes,
go ahead,
sir.
Caller.
Good morning.
Go ahead.
First time calling your show. Listen, I'm 62 years old. From my around 13 to where they had shanty towns in the Commonwealth of the Bahamas. Old administration, governments know what's going on. Illegal immigrants, it's about money. These people are making money off illegal immigrants, cheap labor, all kinds of things going on in this country. They don't want to fix this problem. It's supposed to be Bahamian first, not illegals first. And this is what's going on in our country. The Bahamian people are on the back burner in their own country. And it's not going to get any better. It is going to get worse and worse and worse. Why? Because God is not the picture. God is on the back burner. We are in trouble in this world today. The wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all unrighteousness. This is what's going on. Have a nice day.
Thank you very much, Carla. Aaron, I'll give you the last word. It's 12 o'clock. What's the solution? I want to know the solution. What should our government be doing to make sure Bahamians and those persons who are documented have access to housing?
Like, I never thought I would actually say maybe we need a commission of inquiry on the land and land inventory, you know. I mean, we actually need a commission of inquiry. I just don't know if it's going to make any sense. We really need to take the politics out of it. That's what we do. We have to take the politics out of it. We can't bring resolve to the shanty town issue until we find out why there are significant numbers of pages missing from the land registries for Grand Bahama and Mayo Guana. We've got to take the politics out of it. Because other than that, it's a very simple issue. You cannot treat people in your country like economic collateral damage. Oh, well, we expect that a certain percentage of people are just going to be homeless. Your aim is to ensure that every single person in your country has a bed to sleep in at night. And if they are irregular, undocumented, or illegal migrants, however you want to call them, even then, when your government interdicts them and detains them, there's a standard that has to be upheld for their incarceration, detention, or care. That's very simple. And if we are following those basic principles, we wouldn't have this problem. We have some cultural and some psychological issues to deal with. How does a nation prioritize tourism and housing foreigners, guests, tourists, before it knows exactly where every Bahamian illegal resident is going to sleep? The second thing is this. As long as we think that shanty towns are only where Haitian migrants live, we'll never resolve the problem. Louis Bacon and Peter Nygaard held the nation's attention for months and months and months over what? A shanty town issue, irregular construction on a property and the fight between the two people. As long as we see it as only a migrant issue, a Haitian migrant issue, it will never be resolved. It is a housing issue. It is a land use and regulation issue. It is a housing inventory issue.
I hear you with that. I hope the Minister of Housing, the Minister of Social Service, the Prime Minister is listening, because I believe we have a housing issue crisis. The same as I believe we have a regular shantytown issue, and perhaps by maybe looser, a immigration issue.
Mm-hmm.
But that's just me. Anyway, this has been Guardian Radio in the AM with C.A. Nuri. And of course, Aaron Green was joining me. Thank you very much for listening.